Micah, I have gum in my hair and I don't know how to get it out.
Again?
Yeah. I mean, I really like falling asleep while chewing gum. And it's just a thing that I like. And
do you like waking up to the smell
of bubble gum?
Bubblicious bubble gum?
I do. Well, I like waking up to having bubble gum fresh breath in the morning. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of my thing. And every once in a while, I fall asleep and I get gum in my hair. So how do I get it out? Usually I just cut it out. But I think, is there any other method?
Oh, golly.
Because I don't have enough hair left. It's all gone.
Okay, now this makes sense. I thought you were just going for some sort of like an avant-garde hairstyle.
Oh, no.
And over time, it got even more avant-garde. But this whole time, it's just been bubble gum that's been the issue.
Yeah, it's my bad gum habit.
You could use peanut butter.
You think?
It's a common method. And it's, look, I want to just discuss this because... So quickly, if you don't know, season 4, episode 11, Night Out. This was published April 24th of 2008. And it starts with a wonderful cold open of the same thing happening to Michael.
What's wrong, Michael?
I got gum in my hair.
You do?
This just stinks. Don't touch it. Please don't touch it.
I want to know, did you know the bubble gum trick with peanut butter?
I know that is something people say works. Mm-hmm. I have not seen this work ever.
But you have seen it used.
I have tried using it to help a friend.
Oh, a friend?
Yeah, a friend.
I don't know if you saw that. We're actually live and she had scare quotes there, helping a friend.
I did scare quotes, I did. But I also tried the ice cube method to help the same friend with the same piece of gum. And neither of them works. It's just... gum in the hair stinks. You have to just cut it out. Like, there's nothing you can do. Why does the peanut butter work? I understand maybe it's supposed to be like the oil of it is going to de-stickify and you can like pull it out. But I don't know.
I have not seen it work either. I don't like that Dwight decides to put the hair nut butter in his mouth. Disgusting.
Yeah, that part was pretty gross. I mean, and like the big dollop of peanut butter on Michael's shoulder, it's all a little bit totally gross. I was thinking about the actors filming this and reading the script and being like, all right, you're just gonna have a whole ton of peanut butter in your hair and Dwight is going to be massaging it into your scalp, and this is gonna be for a bit that is just for the cold open for 2 seconds. And they're just like, okay.
Okay, guess we're doing that.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's quite the scene.
And I also like some more like nods to folks who have been office workers at some time, because there totally is like that special thing that people like that when it's out or when something's happened to it, they go, what happened to it? And in this case.
No, Dwight, not the good peanut butter. People are going to get mad.
Hey, this is my hair we're talking about.
There's totally the quote unquote good peanut butter mm-hmm. in every office kitchen that exists. And so it's kind of a nice little nod, I think, to folks there. And then, of course, we have Michael thinking that you can absorb calories through your scalp, which is a great Michaelism.
Gosh, I'm so glad that's not true. You know, I put so much weird high-calorie food in my hair. No kidding.
All right. What is this episode about, Tiff?
Well, there are some basic plot points here that happen. We have Michael trying to date, and we have Ryan wanting overtime so that the salespeople can enter their sales as if the website made sales, which right away, this sounds really shaky ethical grounds here. Like,
yeah, it's shady. It's shady for sure.
It's shady right away, right? Like, this doesn't sound like proper business practices at all.
Feels like something you shouldn't do. Yeah.
Yeah. And everyone kind of calls him out on it throughout the beginning part of this episode. I mean, Dwight asks the question, kind of like the right question right away.
Question, Dwight, why am I being forced to come in tomorrow and pretend that a website made sales that I made?
This is a temporary measure to increase the legitimacy of the site.
Stanley also makes a really good point.
I don't like when my clients call me to help them use the website. I'm not seeing commissions on that.
I hear you, Stanley. That is a great observation.
There's just all these problems with the website. And so that's why we have Ryan at the office. And that kind of sets up the whole Michael dating and eventually getting to New York. But first, I want to talk about the problematic website that Ryan seems to be running.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is the other thing, too, is you have like likable characters and you have dislikable characters. And Ryan Howard is the dislikable character. I can't stand him from the moment he sticks his stupid head into the door and says the stupid things he says. And I just want to push him onto the floor and say, stop, Ryan, go away. We don't want you here. He's got a website that has been, he decides that, you know, you can't just have a website. He's got to come in and disrupt and shake things. He wants to be a Silicon Valley CEO in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So it's got social media, and apparently some sexual predators have chosen to make this site their home.
Yes, the social networking feature of the Dunder Mifflin Infinity website was infiltrated by sexual predators.
He's not listening and taking seriously anything anyone's saying. He's just sort of shoving it aside and saying, oh, don't worry, we'll fix that. We'll fix that. We'll fix that. It's that, like, we'll fix that in post mentality. And it adds to my dislike of this character because he is too proud of his idea to let it fail. And so he'll go as far as to make his employees dislike him even more to, like, fluff up this project that he's working on that he wants to succeed no matter what.
I love to dislike Ryan. I think he should be there because we need a catalyst. We need kind of a unlikable villain figure that comes in every now and then. But he's such like a benign, weird villain where you could just kind of like turn your head to the side and ignore him a little bit because he's not really a force of any kind. He just kind of talks this big talk. I love the conference room meeting that gets out of hand for him because nobody respects him. And I love Kelly coming in also. Her question.
This is my favorite Kelly quote.
Do you have a question, Kelly?
Yeah, I have a lot of questions. Number one, how dare you?
I use that how dare you probably more than any other office quote that's ever existed. She is never going to let him live any of his nonsense down. And like picking on him, I love that the, you know, quote unquote bully and nemesis of the story has this person who's like, nah, you're not just getting away with saying things. You're every time you come here, you're gonna have to deal with me. And I'm just cheering Kelly on. Like, yeah, I want to know, how dare you, Ryan? How dare you?
And I love Michael, who insists that he is not applauding sarcastically, even though his applaud is the most sarcastic applaud I could ever imagine.
Ryan has done a very good job, and I am not applauding sarcastically. Think about it. A month ago, nobody would go on this site because we were worried about getting molested or losing our identity, having it stolen. But now, at a time, TDB, all of these problems will be in the past. You're doing good, kid. You're doing good.
He's trying to compliment Ryan or like embrace his ambition, but he's really pandering to him in this funny way. And it's kind of exactly what he should be hearing. And if only Michael actually had the sarcasm behind what he was saying, it would have been perfect. But he implies that he doesn't. And it's just this really gone wrong conference room meeting, which are always our favorite conference room meetings.
What are those called again?
The Killing Field.
Killing Field.
So yeah, joke after joke. It's classic Office. And it leads into this moment where Michael reveals to Ryan that he's looking for women. Mike and Ryan turns around and shoots him down instantly. And in basically the exact same breath, he turns around and brags to Michael about all the women he's meeting in New York.
Do you know any girls in New York you might want to hook me up with that might be interested in a guy like me?
Nah. Sorry, man.
Well, you tried.
But seriously, you should see the girls I meet at clubs in the city.
Yeah.
Unreal.
They sound great.
But Michael gets in his head that he is going to go to New York and meet these women that Ryan was talking about.
Okay, Dwight, grab your stuff. We're going to New York to party with Ryan and to meet girls.
I love when they get there and the way that they're received when they show up.
Yes, it's wonderful.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, what are you doing here?
Well, you know, just taking you up on your offer to party, so ta-da.
That is so awesome, man.
All right.
And you brought this guy.
Yeah.
Oh.
Ryan, it's Michael and Dwight.
I know it's you guys.
Okay.
I'm so psyched you're here.
Well.
Woo!
All right.
Let's get a drink.
Let's do it.
Because even Michael and Dwight can't really believe that Ryan is excited to see them.
That's the best thing. It's like, oh wow, Michael does have some self-awareness. Yes. Enough to realize that it's very odd how excited Ryan is to see them. And I love that moment because for me, you know, you kind of have to calibrate where you think people's self-awareness stands. And usually we don't give Michael too much credit for that. But for him to have that moment of like, you do know who we are, right? Like you just did not said you didn't want us to be anywhere near you. Like, dude, you realize that's who this is. And I don't know. I just really appreciated that moment of showing like Michael is not completely oblivious.
Yeah, you said that perfectly. That's exactly how I felt. And I thought it was a really great, as you put it, self-awareness moment for Michael that was kind of unexpected from the audience. And I think that this was the right time in the season and in this character's development for that to kind of come out. And we kind of see that self-awareness peeking here and there throughout the night. It's not out the whole time, but it's there every now and then.
That's what she said.
Oh! So you've been getting a lot of good ones recently.
Thank you. Bravo. Oh, thank you so much.
Bravo.
While all of this is, I mean, this kind of sets up the episode. We've got to know why they are staying late and what's going on. And the thing that kind of gets Michael and Dwight out of the office after the troublemaker and his cohort leave. So Michael and Dwight leave. Jim has this idea.
You know what? If we all stayed a couple hours late tonight without Michael distracting us, we wouldn't have to come in at all tomorrow.
So I caught everyone before they left, and I told them my idea. And they loved it, because this is a group that respects good ideas. The one time a year they hear one.
You think Jim would learn his lesson, because the last time Jim tried to do something like this, he ended up as Michael Scott, and everyone was calling him Michael.
Are you reading my notes over my shoulder? Because I feel like today you're saying all the things. But yeah, that's exactly what I wrote down. I was like, doesn't this feel a lot like when he was in charge when Michael was in the woods? Like,
yes. Why are you doing this again, Jim? Why?
It's going to backfire on you, Jim. It is. The office is just going to turn on you. They can't be trusted. And of course, as they're packing up to leave at 9 o'clock, because Jim convinces them all to stay late tonight instead of having to come in on Saturday to do all of this data entry, and they realize that the parking lot gate is locked and they cannot leave, and everyone is super pissed at Jim. And we get one of the best Stanley quotes ever.
If I'm not in my bath with a glass of red wine in 1 hour, you're both dead.
Stanley is like, I think I've said this before, but I really need a Stanley Hudson soundboard, because it's just some of the things he says are just so brilliant. And he cracks me up. He's upset. I mean, everybody's upset. Everything, all of this stuff happens. It just keeps happening. You know, Yeah, Jim and Pam keep messing up. And so they sort of get this target on their back a little bit, because it feels like they're both making mistakes that lead to them having to stay when they would all, of course, rather be able to go home. And, you know, it's reasonable. I would not want to be stuck there. And especially after, like, the whole point was, let's get out so that we don't have to stay here a whole nother day. And if you don't follow through with everything that requires, then you got a bit of a problem. And again, this is one of those times where I appreciate the way that this kind of incorporates some standard office happenings of, you know, you having a security guard, you having keys, you having different people that you have to talk to be able to gain access to the lot, et cetera, et cetera. It reminds us again that, like, this is, you know, this is the office. It is the setting of the office. And we are going to have those situations where those complications arise.
I also like seeing Jim fail, because I feel like a lot of times in shows like this, you kind of have the charming hero and they very rarely fail or have everyone kind of turn against them. And we do see Jim having those instances every now and then. And I think it's humanizing for him. It grounds him. It doesn't make him seem like the superstar of the office or Mr. Perfect. We kind of understand why Jim is a person that's in this nowhere job sometimes, you know, like otherwise you'd be like, why is this handsome man here selling paper? Like, what's up with him? And I think we get these little glimpses of him failing and we can find out what's up with him, or like his lack of ambition, or his you know, the way he's easily distracted and all of these things, where it's a kind of a contrast to when we see Michael. We expect him to be in this kind of position, but then we see him succeed or be good, being great at his job. And that's like another little side of it. And I like those two characters, the way they get grounded and they get those little points of characterization throughout the series. And we see a couple of the mishaps that happen back at the office while they are locked inside. I think we should go through those instead of bouncing back and forth to the nightclub.
Yeah, I agree.
The football right to Meredith's face.
Oh my goodness. Just boom.
It had to be Meredith. Like, of all the people, like, she gets hit with a car. She gets like the bat on her head. She gets the football in her face.
Rabies.
It's always Meredith. Poor Meredith.
And that was so hard. That sound is so hard.
And she's all swollen, right? Oh man, it's brutal. And we really need to talk about the whole Hank situation.
My goodness. So yeah, this, I like this part because this is another one of those moments where to me, like, Creed is just a strange character and I really appreciate Creed. So if you work in this big building and you are in an office and you talk to your office people and there are other people there, you may not necessarily be interacting with them all that much. You're most likely just interacting with your people. And so it's understandable that that's the case. Well, in this case, they're not interacting with the security guard as much, who works at the desk downstairs. And so they can't remember his name, but they need his help in order to get to go home. And nobody can remember his name. Finally, we realize Toby somehow has his number, which, you know, in a way makes sense. Toby's kind of lonely and like maybe reaching out, or it's just because he's HR and he might need to have the security guard's number. But they all are trying to guess his name. And it's so awkward. Like, Jim is so awkward on this call, but I feel it because you want to not let the person know whose help you absolutely need, mm-hmm. you know, like that you don't know them, that they're impersonal to you. And it's only Creed that knows that the security guard's name is Hank, but Jim doesn't believe Creed.
It's under here as security guard home. Did you not get his name or?
No.
It's ringing. Does anybody have his name quick?
Yes, it's Eddie.
It's not Eddie. It's Evan.
Or Hank. His name is Hank.
Oh, guys, his name's not Hank. It's, is it Edgar?
Elliot.
Is it Hey, Chief.
But it's so funny because Creed always has the wrong names for everybody. He's always not knowing anyone's name. He calls people by their features instead. He has no idea who any of his coworkers are, but he just throws that name out so confidently. He's like, it's Hank. It's, of course it's Hank. And everyone's like, yeah, Creed, whatever. It's totally not Hank. Hey, Chief.
Given that Creed has had a bit of a criminal history, I'm not surprised that he knows the security guard's name. That makes sense to me.
We also hear a little failing of Jim's, because Jim dropped the ball when it came to collecting the Christmas gift for Hank. And so we see another time where he's like, oh, just getting that hole dug deeper and deeper and deeper.
And it's, like I said, it starts to turn everybody, not just against Jim, but because it reminds me of my partner recently started watching that reality TV show Survivor. Mm-hmm. And I've been getting into it as well, and I'm annoyed because it's a waste of time, but I'm really enjoying it.
Enjoyment is never a waste of time.
Amen, sister. I need to keep that in mind. It reminds me of the times when they have couples that are on different teams, and if a person on the one team does something that people don't like, then it immediately makes the other person in the couple an enemy to everyone. And it's like, it's not their fault, but because they're associated with that person, it becomes their fault. And so Pam is trying to survive on the island, and Jim made too many flubs, so now Pam is getting targeted by the other people on the island, and the alliance is falling apart, and she's going to get voted off, and she's going to have to go to Redemption Island, and it's just so stressful, and I feel bad for Pam. But then she hits Meredith with a football, so then she's involved in it too, and it's not just Jim making all the mistakes to ruin the alliance.
Yeah, and she was also the one that locked the office from the inside.
Oh, that's true.
She doesn't have the keys because Dwight insisted on keeping both sets.
There is a master key and a spare key for the office. Dwight has them both. When I asked, "What if you die, Dwight? How will we get into the office?" he said, "If I'm dead, you guys have been dead for weeks."
Which is such a Dwight thing to say. I can picture him just imagining like a zombie apocalypse, and he sees himself as the sole survivor.
You immediately believe it.
Finally, this awkward, stressful evening kind of culminates in one of the best scene exits of all time from The Office.
Oh my God.
It is Toby having the worst moment ever.
All throughout the night, like, we should note that all throughout the night, he's sort of subtly becoming the hero. Remember, he's the one who had Hank's number.
Oh, right. He's feeling good. He's feeling good. So that's why this happened here.
Yeah, he's feeling good. He did something else that they were happy about. And then he makes a joke that everybody's laughing about. And what happens?
Oh, he puts his unsolicited hand on Pam's leg. And then he moves his finger. And it's just, okay, that is a great move when it is wanted. That is the worst move when it is unwanted.
Everybody, like, I could feel the camera people turning their heads and looking at that. And not even just the people in front of the camera, the people behind the camera too.
Oh, the finger caress was really the clincher of how horrible that went. Oh, it was just the worst.
It turns my stomach almost. That's how awkward and gross and wrong and
everyone is just silent. And they can't believe what's happening. And then he just like the awkward pat, and then he announces he wants to move to Costa Rica. And then the best part is he just jumps the fence and runs home.
And let's have a moment here, folks. Toby scales the fence and runs home. If that is not evidence for Scranton Strangler, that upper body strength, again, going to Costa Rica all of a sudden, trying to go to a different place and get away from it all.
Okay, he did mention Costa Rica during branch closing episode. He had brought it up in the past.
Well, I mean, he could have been a serial killer for a long time.
That's true.
We don't know.
If someone doesn't know, there is a fan theory out there that Micah is referring to that Toby is the Scranton Strangler, which is a hilarious fan theory. And there are little evidences of it here and there if you really want to read into some of these situations. And this is definitely one of them.
Strangling someone, I have to imagine, is not very easy. You got to have a lot of upper body strength. Toby can scale a fence like that. Yeah.
So Hank was taking a very long time to show up. That's why everyone had all this time for, you know, footballs in the face and awkward knee caresses. And to kind of close out this plot of the episode, the cleaning people show up before Hank does, and everyone manages to get out of the gate because the cleaning people unlock it. And I love when Hank shows up and everyone is just gone, because again, Jim drops the ball and doesn't call Hank. Oh, so rude.
This time, Jim pulls another Michael. He assumes that the cleaning crew speak Spanish and immediately starts to pull Oscar over, like, "Hey, I need your help."
Cleaning people.
Oscar.
Okay, so all you need to do is explain to them what happened, because I think they can help us.
Why are you assuming they only speak Spanish?
If they speak Spanish.
Good evening. We locked ourselves in.
Nosotros trabajamos aquí, nos trancamos. Okay?
They happen to speak Spanish.
Aquí es.
That's such a Michael move.
It is a very Michael move.
Of course, it does end up being the case. And so then, you know, Oscar is able to communicate with them and get their help. But such a Michael move.
But yeah, you're exactly right. When mm-hmm. Jim gets put in charge, he gets so, like, he gets a little Michael-y. It's almost like the job is Michael-y.
The job makes you Michael-y.
Yeah, it's Michael-y. That's our new word. Very Michael-y. Michael-y. All right, speaking of Michael-y, we should get on over to that hot, hot nightclub over in the city.
The place is packed.
Fire hazard.
It's like a sexy preschool.
Beautiful babies.
Sexy preschool, which is so wrong because we were just talking about sexual predators. Yeah. Oh, man. What is happening? So we go over to the sexy preschool nightclub. We have Ryan loving the presence of Dwight and Michael, which is super strange. And we also see Ryan acting weird. We see the camera kind of picking up little crazy behaviors he's doing, going to the bathroom often. He is twitchy.
Yes, very twitchy
with his hands, touching his nose, getting really excited about stuff, feeling like the most important person in the room. Can we say coke problem? Oh my goodness.
Cocaine.
Yeah, he's so 80s. He's so 80s right now, like 80s business boy. Like, he's ready.
Yes, he is. Probably watched some movies and thought, this is what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, I'm in New York. I'm a business boy, and it's time to get a small coke problem. So
I love that you call him business boy. That is so wonderful. That's exactly what he is, a little business boy. And he wants to be a big businessman, but he's a little business boy. And Michael, of course, too innocent, doesn't pick up on it. Dwight starts to pick up on it, but not necessarily in the, like, I know that you're on coke right now, just more that he's observant and picks up on the fact that he keeps, like, using the restroom and all these different things and has these theories for what might be wrong with him.
But Dwight really has no idea. He doesn't really understand drug culture or anything, like, at all. And this is kind of brings back to the drug testing episode.
Yes.
Where he insists he knows everything about drug users.
Cannabis, Northern Lights, Indica. No, it's marijuana.
Yeah, exactly. He can't even tell that Ryan is on drugs at all. He has no clue. And yet he thinks he is like this great drug detective, which obviously he is not. And Ryan ends the evening at the first bar smashing the bottle. And it's just this whole dramatic scene. He is a mess.
Did you want a place where we can meet older women?
I would love a place where we can meet older girls.
Hell yeah. I'll look it up.
Hi. Wow, that's dangerous.
Michael, of course, in classic Michael ways, is getting overly invested in people too quickly. He's trying to find a replacement for the relationship that he had with Jan, like as far along as it was. And so every person that he talks to, the moment that they kind of stop expressing interest, like it's a big deal to him. And it's like, Michael, you're not going to find the love of your life in 30 seconds, in a 30-second conversation. But he wants to find the one this evening in some nightclub, and that's just not how it works, the poor guy. And I find it kind of funny that while Michael, who is always being a tryhard, and you know, that's sort of the thing that always gets him into trouble, is when he's aware of the fact that he needs to try and he's in his head and he tries too hard, is not getting anything done that he wants to get done. While Dwight, who is doing the complete opposite of trying, ends up attracting several people's attention, and they buy him a drink and he doesn't want it. And it's just like that juxtaposition between the two of them and what they desire for the evening is, I mean, because Dwight spends half the time being distracted by a person who he thinks is a hobbit from The Lord of the Rings. And it's like he's not paying any attention to anybody, and yet he's the one who picks up the attention, whereas Michael, who's like, I want to find somebody tonight, I'm going to call my mom and ask for advice. Nah, he's not getting anything.
I do really like the whole scene with the Amazon basketball player ladies.
That was fun.
It was really great to see. I like how Dwight kind of gets some game all of a sudden. It's like Dwight has game. Like, he was so confident.
It's off. It's not the dude I know. It's some other loser who won't let us in without chicks.
You're kidding.
Let's bail. Okay, wait. You two. Jersey State girls. Let's go.
We're not going unless we can all go.
Okay. You know what? Fine. Let's go. Two girls, two guys. Come on. Let's do it. Come on, Brian. Move out.
Come on.
Okay. Three or four with him. Let's go. Come on. Here we go.
That's don't step on him.
Wait a second. That was Dwight being the cool guy getting everyone into the club with these like tall, beautiful women. And it was kind of awesome. I do like how he rejects her drink and then she ends up still making out with him. I don't know how that works, yes. But whatever. I mean, I gotta say, you know, confidence is attractive. And I think that that's where Dwight's game is coming from, is that he has an overabundance of self-confidence a lot of the time. And it was really fun to see Dwight in this situation. And I like how he was the one that hooked up tonight and nobody else did.
And two, I like that his confidence comes from it's ignorance almost. It's his confidence comes from just the fact that he's kind of like being who he is. It's just a lack of self-consciousness that could get in the way. And I love that he doesn't let that affect him. It works, and it is, again, the opposite of Michael chasing that bone and getting himself into trouble always.
Yeah.
But, oh, I wanted to note, too, that, like, to add insult to injury on having to be stuck in the office at night, Michael sends that photo of Dwight making out with somebody over to everybody at work. And I like that it's just, like, one more nail in the coffin, one more, you know, slash, one more cut.
I like that Michael has everyone's phone number in his phone, so at the ready that he can send a group text that fast. Like, that's really good.
Yes. It just shows he considers those people his family or, you know, his close friends. And this is the case here.
At the very end, we do get to see a little glimpse of Ryan's not glamorous life.
This is in my notes, so we're looking at each other's notes.
He has all this like braggy look, my expensive haircut, I meet all these women, I have my fancy expensive coke problem. And then we get to see his apartment, which is kind of a trash hole. It's a bit of a bachelor pad.
It's tiny. It's messy.
The only cool thing is maybe the big TV, but that's about it. He says he's in like these expensive suits and he has his little beard and
$700,000 haircut.
Yeah. Business boy, but really behind the scenes, he is just living life like everybody else in a little tiny New York apartment that's way too messy and falling asleep in his clothes. And I do appreciate that he takes that moment to reach out, even though he says, my friend who has a drug problem.
My friend who had gum stuck in her hair.
I do like that he reaches out in that way. I think that's a little bit of a self-awareness moment for Ryan, maybe a tiny bit. I don't know.
Oh, for sure. I definitely think that's what it is. It's a chance that he throws out there. And unfortunately, that chance is not handled properly, I guess.
They're giving us a tiny little inkling to not completely hate Ryan at the end of this night. And but I do like that we get a glimpse of that. He isn't as glamorous as we all thought, and the cameras caught it.
Yes, we get to see that little peek into the not-so-great life of business boy Ryan Howard.
Actually, let's hear it for the boys.
Boys on the side. Yeah, that's. I don't have anything else really to say about this episode. I will say it's not as much of a filler episode as Chair Model, which I appreciate.
Yes, we are starting to amp back up. I feel like we peaked with Dinner Party. We took a deep dive with Chair Model, and now we are climbing our way back up to Office Wonder Dome. So here we are. I think this has a lot of great little quotes in it. I think it has a lot of funny moments. I think it has a lot of great character interactions and redeeming qualities and just all the things that we talked about today. This episode is starting to ramp it all back up again for us.
I couldn't agree more.
So Micah, let's hear about that Dundee.
Let's hear it for the Dundee.
Oh, I like that. Let's hear it for the Dundee.
Folks, you may remember that a while back we put out the challenge. There was the episode local ad where Michael set to task Daryl and a few other folks to put together a jingle for the Scranton office of Dunder Mifflin. And Michael was expecting rap music, and Daryl was not going to be doing rap music. And Daryl, in the way that he trolls Michael, pretended he didn't know what rap music was. Michael then says that he's going to put together a playlist for Daryl. And we put forth the challenge, create the playlist that Michael would make for Daryl. And so we've given you quite a bit of time to put together this these playlists and submit them. And we are excited to announce the winner tonight. So without further ado, I am excited to present this week's Dundee, the Dink and Flicka Award to Rap Mixtape Urgent A by Liam Gray. Liam Gray not only put together a custom album artwork for this one, but also that clever title, Rap Mixtape with Urgent A in parentheses. That, of course, is a reference to Michael Scott's email scheme on how he gets people to pay attention.
So good.
Brilliant, in my opinion. Some highlights includes Single Ladies, Put a Ring on It, as well as Mambo Number 5. And Tiff, what is your highlight from this here playlist?
I mean, it has the classic Who Let the Dogs Out. So that's extremely Michael pick right there. It's so good. The curation of this mixtape and the custom album art and the funny name. It was very, very good.
Yeah, they all, I think, were fantastic. But this one just stood out for sort of the whole picture, the whole package ended up being really great. So Liam Gray, please do reach out to us. You can Twitter DM us, or if you're a member, you can message one of us in the Slack, and we will get your information.
And we'll be sharing this list in our show notes. So make sure you go grab it for yourself and put it in your Apple Music.
Yes, it belongs in your Apple Music library. And because these were so great, we also wanted to announce the honorable mention. Mm-hmm. That is just because we had a clever. It's called Paper Productions by Michael Scarn. And this is by Jonathan Snyder. So Paper Productions by Michael Scarn, good reference there with good old Michael Scarn. And this playlist was good on its own. You know, you've got Baby Got Back, you've got No Scrubs from TLC, which is hilarious. But the best part about this one was the repeat of Gangsta's Paradise.
Oh my gosh.
Because that seems like a Michael move to me. Absolutely, hands down. He's like, I love this song so much, I want to listen to it over and over again.
Totally. And for the record, I just want to put it out there, this was my pick. Micah and I were totally divided on which one should win. But overall, we came to the consensus that it is the Liam Gray. So we just had to have a runners-up best in show, I guess. Which is it? Wait. Is best in show winning?
Best in show is winning if you're dogs. But I don't think it counts if you're humans.
So, okay, Miss Congeniality? I don't know. Is that the award that they're going to get?
That works for me. Miss Congeniality.
Jonathan Snyder, you get the Miss Congeniality Award runner-up Dundee, because that, it was just so good. Oh, gosh, I love the repetition of Gangster's Paradise.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
It was a struggle. It was a struggle to pick the winner, and ultimately it came down to kind of that one extra bit of effort that went toward making a custom album art there. So congratulations to all, and thank you to all of you who participated in this.
Yeah, we got a lot of great people submitting fantastic playlists, and we just want to thank everyone for being super excellent and participating and taking the time to make these mixes, because we actually listen to them all. I've added a whole bunch of new stuff to my music library, so thank you for that. You've given me the education I've always wanted.
Time out. I thought I was under the impression that this was going to be a rap.
What's rap?
Okay, Daryl, wow. You need to learn a lot about your own culture. I'll make you a mix.
Great.
Congratulations. Come on up here and get your Dundee.
So well deserved. Thank you so much for listening, and be sure to go follow us over at tall_beats on Twitter, and we will be back to talk about the episode.
Did I stutter?
I love that that's the title of this episode, actually, which is a strange title. We never get a quote title from The Office. It's usually something that happens. So yeah, the Did I Stutter episode.
Tiff, I'm not applauding sarcastically.
Thank you.